With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's Thursday, the 19th of March. It's On the Continent on Football Ramble Daily. I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
Andy, how you doing?
Yeah, good. It turns out it's quite difficult to say my name.
Yeah, we had a couple of goes at that, didn't we? Because it's all very different, but
yeah,
we got there in the end.
Yeah, we certainly did. We certainly did.
I think it's also quite interesting because people will think of you as being the model pro in this arrangement and think of me as being all over the place. But in that case, they were wrong.
It's because you're directing operations more than you normally are. I would say that's the issue here.
What you're trying to say is if that were even possible, I'm being more bossy than I usually am. Which I don't know if that is possible, but I think over the next few weeks, we are going to find out.
Are
you bearing up in the current situation? Are you doing okay?
Yeah, good. It's good to be still getting out there as Football Ramble Daily. It's great to have everyone tweeting us and emailing us and responding. Yeah. That's been something that, well, I said it on Jules and Andy, and I said it when we tweeted it out afterwards, but we really do appreciate it more than ever. It's really nice. And it's not just for content. It's just lovely to connect when everyone's indoors, I think.
I completely agree. Yeah, absolutely right. And I think actually you've just reminded me there that you're recording a mailbag episode with Marcus later, aren't you, for Patreon subscribers?
Yes.
And a few people may have seen our the tweet that went out earlier this week about what we anticipate to be the kind of parlous state of the advertising industry and the fact that there's no football. So if people can donate and contribute and become a Patreon subscriber, that'd be really much appreciated. It's a great offer. I think there's a lot of extra bits and pieces people can avail themselves of. for as little as $5 a month. So patreon.com/footballrambledaily is the place to do that. And thank you very much to everyone who's done that so far. I'll put another call out on the preview show tomorrow with the rest of the gang, just to remind people. But if you can do that, it's patreon.com/footballrambledaily. Okay, so let's get stuck into the main story of what I think is the main story of the day. Of course, there are still there is still no football at all pretty much everywhere in Europe, with the exception of Turkey, I think. And we'll come on to them a little bit later, because there's some actual football to talk about there. So we don't want to ignore that. But I think the big story for us, Andy, since we last recorded a live episode, which was you with Jules on Tuesday, is that Euro 2020 has been officially postponed until 2021. Just give us a flavour of what that means, beyond the obvious, obviously, and what your thoughts are on that.
Well, as you said, Luke, it's what we expected. It was the only thing to do, really, and not only because it was completely impractical to have a tournament over so many different countries at the worst possible time, and the fact that, you know, we probably won't be ready to play football again by then, and certainly not in front of spectators. But I think really it's all the knock-ons. The reason that all the different leagues across Europe were waiting for this teleconference is because they needed some sort of surety from UEFA, even though a lot of stuff is still penciled in, so they could start to make their own tentative plans. And that's all they are at the moment, tentative plans. And all the stuff we're seeing about how Serie A might be split over two seasons, the thing that's come out in the Spanish media today about Javier Tebas, the president of La Liga, and his idea for some sort of calendar to finish the season should things sort of calm down to a reasonable level. These can only be projections and speculations so far, as we know. We've no idea how long this is going to last and how long Europe is going to be indoors, really. But what we did get, which I think is very important, from the UEFA decision and the meeting, is the fact that not only is this summer and beyond free for domestic leagues to be completed, but that rather than being finished, scrapped, cancelled or wiped, the Champions League or Europa League are simply indefinitely suspended. Now, this is really important because leagues were having to look at how they would come to a conclusion of who would be their Champions League representatives or Europa League representatives going into next season. Because, of course, we've got qualifiers and group stages and all that sort of stuff projected on the horizon in late summer. Now that pressure has been taken away. That gives leagues a bit more leeway to work things out. And so whether we're looking at a truncated domestic season in 2021, a truncated Champions League in 2021, we really don't know. But what it means is there is room for these domestic leagues to work with. We have to say, when we look at Euro 2020 itself and pardon me, and it's moved forward to 2021, what that means is there'll be knock-on effects for other UEFA competitions, like the Women's Euro, which was due to happen in 2021, and the Under 21 Euro. Now, I know some people, some supporters of the women's game are quite disappointed because they'd hoped there could be a sort of dual jamboree between the men's Euro and the women's Euro off the back of it.
That's what I anticipated would happen. I thought automatically they would run concurrently. But the thing is, the situation is so fluid, and it feels to me a lot of the news that's being put out by different football associations and by UEFA and FIFA is that they feel to me they smack massively of just buying each other more time every time they do it. Who was it? I mean, it was either you who was saying earlier in the week or someone else was saying that. I forget who it was that came out and said it, but they said a solid plan in the morning is now at the moment not viable or workable by the afternoon.
Yes,
so
Freddie Bobic said that, the sporting director of Eintracht Frankfurt. Yeah, I think for me, in terms of the women's Euro, I think putting it back to 2022 makes a lot of sense. I can understand people talk about this two-month-long celebration of football and how that would be such a huge boost to each other. I do understand that point of view. But for me, the idea of the women's game being subordinate in any way to the men's game is not a great prospect. And I think especially with the 2022 World Cup being moved to the end of the year, so there'd be no particular competition for it, I think the women's game deserves to be centre stage and deserves to have its own summer, really.
Yeah, and so on these two UEFA working groups that have been set up, one to kind of look at the calendar and one to look at the financial side, and I think you did mention it in that piece you just did there, but just to reiterate, if you did mention it, that this idea about the 30th of June, that's a preferred date, right? Again, that feeds back into what I was saying a second ago about this. It's a nice to have. It's a kind of the best working case scenario at this point.
Yes.
But it's not a set in stone date just yet. But to just talk to us a bit about these two working groups that they've set up and when we expect to see any kind of more information coming out. Will it be a case of that they won't be able to give us any information at the moment because the situation is still so fluid?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So I would expect the financial group, the group dealing with the economic implications of various postponements, to be active more quickly, really, or to provide projections, concrete projections, more quickly, because even though, as you say, it is also fluid, the fact that clubs are going to be losing money hand over fist is something that's real, that's evident, no matter how long this lasts. So that's something that's going to have to be dealt with immediately. Now, this also feeds into financial fair play, Luke, because there are clubs that are clearly going to be in breach of those regulations that wouldn't have been in breach of them before. So there's every expectation that UEFA and the FFP board will give them that little bit of extra leeway and understand in the circumstances. And we've seen this before when you've had in countries like Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, their finances crash and that affects the exchange rate with the euro. So that they've given them a bit of extra time and a bit of extra wriggle room to deal with that. So there is precedent for doing it. What they've been talking about in France this morning is that clubs that were already in breach of FFP are unlikely to get away with it just because this situation has arrived. So Marseille, for example, and we'll come to the whole Lyon Marseille thing, which is wholly unedifying, later. But Marseille, who look like they're in breach of FFP rules and have got a lot of work to do on their finances, what happened before this crisis is not going to be wiped out by what's happened in the last 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Yeah. And on the economic side, I mean, I don't know if you saw, I mean, presumably you did, but for those listening who haven't seen it, there were some really strange and quite problematic comments coming from Dortmund CEO Aki Watzke about the idea of the bigger clubs, in quotes, helping out the smaller clubs financially. Now, I think it's a bit of a red herring, I think, because, of course, any kind of economic measures that need to be taken to protect clubs in light of what's happening here, you'd expect to be some kind of orchestrated top-down kind of solution and not a piecemeal type thing where bigger clubs help smaller clubs. But nevertheless, Watzke did say, at the end of the day, the clubs who have made the effort to put a bit of money aside, in this case, of course, talking about his own club, these past years, can't reward those who have not. We're running businesses on a market and we're in competition. I mean, in terms of the timing and the lack of sensitivity there, I mean, it's an awful message to be putting out there. But does it show, I mean, first of all, what are your thoughts on that? And secondly, does it show just that we're starting to see clubs, whether they're big or small, really start to worry about their own survival and what this means for them going forward.
Well, it suggests a short memory, doesn't it, Luke? Because in 2005, they were having creditors hold off, and he was a huge part of that, Aki Ratzka. That's the reason that Borussia Dortmund are still here and have progressed to this point. They
noticed that Dietmar Hopp jumped straight in there to try and protect his own reputation by saying, "No, I'll be a good guy about it. Come on, everyone." After what he's been going through.
You know, it's an opportunity for him, isn't he? I mean, you know, the guy who was being Hopp was being ripped on the terraces a week and a half
now he's
ago.
Kind of wants to style himself as this new kind of Robin Hood type character, which is a great opportunity for him. I think he sees it's so funny how these people react to this kind of stuff.
It is interesting because of course he's, for a lot of Germany, Dietmar Hopp, come out as a hero for saying, "No, Donald Trump, I will not sell you the vaccine if we come up with it," you know. So I think a lot of people who followed Dietmar Hopp and followed his journey know that the two sides of him are different. He's a very complex character anyway, because what the ultras have been getting on him for is his involvement with football. No one's ever denied that this is a guy who's a great philanthropist, who's done a lot for cancer patients. That's totally different to the football-based complaints that people and especially ultra groups in Germany have about him. So the two things have to be held separate. But going back to Vatska, I mean, you know, they famously borrowed money from Bayern in 2005 to keep going. I think we've talked a lot about this in a UK context, of course, because, you know, we know there are going to be lots of clubs, and Jules and I spoke about it on Jules and Andy on Tuesday, who are going to be in trouble and are going to need a lot of help out there from League One downwards. But I think when you go to other European leagues, and Germany's not separate from this, even though there are some very well-supported clubs in the Bundesliga Zwei, there are clubs higher up the pyramid who are going to be affected because there's not the same money outside the top flight that there is in England in pretty much every other European country. So I'm sure we'll come to Portugal and Spain when we get a little bit further down the line in the show. But, you know, there are definitely clubs that have got an issue. I mean, it's something that I wrote about in my Bundesliga column in The Guardian on Monday. The fact that football clubs in Germany, as part of their, in the top two divisions, as part of their TV deal, are due the final tranche of TV money between now and the end of the season. It's around 304 million euros. Now, Bayern is not divided equally; it's divided differently, and I guess this goes back to what Vatska was talking about. But Bayern are due, I think, about 10% of that, so about 32 million, something around that, just a little bit over 10%. If they don't get that money, if the games don't happen, say, that will sting. There's no doubt about that. It's a significant amount of money to lose. But once you get down to the bottom of the second tier, and the lesser money clubs there, like Osnabrück and Sandhausen, who we saw the other week, of course. I mean, that seems like about 5 years ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But if they don't get their 2 million or 2.3 million, that is going to put them in serious trouble, especially with the loss of match day revenue. So I think to say or even suggest that, you know, we can't help these clubs, I mean, it's nonsense. All I would say is at the moment, there is a lot of nonsense being spoken because there is precious little certainty for people to work with. And people are panicking at every level of society, whether it be in the boardroom at Borussia Dortmund or Bayern, or whether it be, you know, a single mum on an estate trying to bring up three kids. You know, everyone's got their challenges, and we've kind of got to cut everyone a bit of slack, haven't we?
Absolutely. But do you? But just to clarify though, but do you see whatever happens coming out of this this financial UEFA working group? Is there going to be a kind of one size fits all top down big organisational effort to help these clubs, or is it going to be left to the relative national organisations to sort it out? And it, presumably it's going to be one of those two. It's not going to be a case of what Vatska seems to be suggesting, that we're not going to chuck a load of our personal money at these smaller clubs, because why should we? Because the reason I ask that, Andy, is chiefly because, as far as I understand it, UEFA, for example, get the vast majority of their money from the tournaments they host, not from the TV rights, which they instantly just pass most of which straight onto the clubs. So and they're having to postpone that tournament for a year. So I'm just trying to think about how this would work. In of course, as we keep saying, in what is a very fluid situation, it just doesn't seem that clear to me as to what's going to happen. Now, of course, I know that this financial working group is set up expressly for this purpose, but I'm just asking you to, if you can, maybe try and predict the action they might take.
Well, I don't think there can be a one-size-fits-all, Luca. I think that's pretty clear because, as we've touched on, the challenges and the structures of the different countries are so different. But on the other hand, it's clear that UEFA do have cash reserves which they've tapped into already. I mean, there were stories at the start of the week that they would demand towards 300 million euros from the national associations to postpone Euro 2020. Alexander Seferin was really firm on the fact that that had never been on the table. He was pretty clear about that, and I think we've seen actually from Seferin's behaviour, not just now, but over the last year or so, that he's someone who has quite a bluntness, quite a straightforwardness that's quite welcome from someone in that sort of role, I think. Although, you know, the proof will only be in the coming months and what they're able to do. But certainly they can strongly encourage clubs to do something and to put something in. I don't know if it will work in terms of teams, clubs that they feel have historically contributed to the competition. But I don't think it just has to be that, because if you look at the fact that UEFA makes a lot of social investments in facilities, in grassroots, in community projects. So I don't think it necessarily has to be directly related to the Champions League. I think they can take a broader remit on this. And even though they tend to step back from interfering in national issues on the whole, and I think that's quite right, because national associations and federations should take responsibility for keeping their own house in order, I do think they can step out of that a little bit and contribute a little bit more this time, and it seems they're willing to.
Well, we'll watch that series, that issue kind of develop with interest, I guess. I mean, I've got a feeling that we're in a situation now where by the time we come around to recording again on the continent next week, it's going to be completely different because the news is moving so rapidly. Just finally on before we kind of wrap up this little section and move on to some of the other countries we want to talk about, the player contracts issue, which I guess kind of taps in slightly into this working group by UEFA, the calendar side of things. But if we focus on the player contract issue, clearly that UEFA want to wrap up seasons where they can, or the national associations want to wrap up football seasons where they can by the 30th of June, chiefly because of player contracts. Of course, whether that will happen or not, it remains to be seen, as we keep saying. But one thing that I really wanted to bring up that you mentioned, that you just mentioned fleetingly on Tuesday with Jules, is this idea that in Portugal, and I think some other countries as well, there's an almost a business as usual aspect to these contracts. If they're not renewed, they carry on until further notice as they were. Now, is that true? And if it is, can you give us a bit more detail? And are there any other countries where you understand that to be the case as well?
Yeah, I mean, the difference is that in Portugal, they've talked about it being part of the league statutes in extraordinary situations, as I mentioned on Tuesday. The fact that if a contract runs out, there's provision to extend it without signing anything else on the current terms for an indefinite period until it comes to some sort of end. I think in this situation, that would be highly desirable if there was some sort of transfer amnesty. Now, I've no idea the legality of that in the statutes of all the different leagues over Europe. But to me, I would compare it to, I don't know, say if you have a mobile phone contract, for example, if it your 12-month or 18-month mobile phone contract runs out, if you don't do anything, it often continues on similar terms. That to me seems the most reasonable way of doing it, if that is at all possible, because I think, and we've got it's from Estadio Deportivo today in Spain, as I mentioned earlier, Javier Tebas is penciled in calendar for the rest of the season, so that La Liga will resume on the 16th of May and go through until the 11th of July, that the Champions League might resume on the 19th of May and with the final on the 27th of June. That all seems enormously optimistic to me at the moment. And I'm sure to a lot of people, to you and to a lot of people listening as well. So I think while it's, as you said at the top, a guideline, I think we have to project forward thinking that it won't all be resolved by then. We have to give ourselves a little bit more time. And I think in this situation, to have some sort of transfer amnesty would be a pretty good idea and a pretty fair to work with situation, I think.
Was er han konsekvent i sit indgreb? Han har stået en stor kamp, synes jeg, Mogens Krogh. Ole Bjørn, selvfølgelig. Og igen usikkerhed viser David James.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Turning our attention to Spain then, a tragic story coming out of Malaga. A youth team coach at a Malaga-based club has died of complications arising from coronavirus. Francisco Garcia of Atletico Portada Alta had an undiagnosed form of leukemia, which only revealed itself when he was being treated for symptoms of the virus. It's a really tragic story, as I say, and the reason I include it is just because it throws into pretty stark focus, if people need more reminding, that this is a very, very real thing. And it is worth bearing in mind that this is going to have serious implications. And the big picture here is to make sure as many people as possible stay safe and healthy. So let's bear that in mind. But moving on to the football itself, the head of the Spanish FA, Luis Rubiales, appears to be fairly, I mean, can you be fairly furious? I'm just going to say furious.
Yeah, I don't think you need the conditioning word there.
No. He seems very upset with clubs for getting corona testing kits in when they're in short supply. He called it unpatriotic. Of course, we've seen a lot of football players testing positive for the virus. About 35% of the players and staff, Valencia, for example, Blaise Matuidi as well, and obviously all sorts of players in Italy and in England, to name just a few. What do you make of this story and Rubiales' take on it and how forceful he's been? Is it a good thing? I think it probably is, isn't it?
Well, there are two ways we have to look at this. I mean, firstly, the fact that I think people do have to be more public-spirited and not think of just what's inside their bubble. I think that's very important. But on the other hand, I think we have to paint it in the context of the fact that La Liga and the RFEF, the Spanish FA, have been at loggerheads for a very, very long time. So that's something we have to bear in mind. It's something that came up when we were talking about the Martin Brathwaite situation, in that, you know, really it was a formality that Barcelona would be able to do that because the league rules provided for it already. And the RFEF was saying, well, we have to sanction it first. Well, there were seven other cases of a similar sort of transfer situation outside window to make up for long-term injured so far this season. And they didn't get involved in any of those. So it was just a case of throwing weight around. What I did think was really interesting is Valladolid, of course, their president, their majority shareholder is Ronaldo. They took the step of formally rejecting La Liga's offer of coronavirus tests because that they felt that other people needed them more, which was a pretty great thing to see and a pretty great gesture, I thought.
Yeah, I think so. And I think what needs to happen in these times of crisis across the board is good, solid, strong kind of leadership and making sensible decisions. Then we know that we can assume, I think, that if you are a young, fit athlete and you're not showing any symptoms, you probably don't need to be tested. What you need to do is go home and self-isolate if someone in the squad's got it and do the decent thing. Spain is, I mean, as far as I understand it, behind Italy, Spain has been hit the second hardest by this virus so far, and they really need all the resources and all the help they can get. And it's only right that people play their part in that, and leadership positions such as the type that Luis Rubiales holds are obviously really important. We don't want to see it turn into a kind of point scoring exercise between La Liga and the Spanish FA, though, do we?
Which is inevitably what will happen.
I said that with a kind of depressing amount of inevitability because next week it's almost certain that's what's going to have happened, right?
Yeah, I think so. And Rubiales has had a strange old time in charge of the RFEF because bear in mind he'd been in charge 6 weeks when Julen Lopetegui upped and left for Real Madrid on the eve of the World Cup, and he felt forced to sack him afterwards. I mean, Rubiales' own position has been under some scrutiny in the last little while. Of course, we talked on OTC about Iker Casillas standing for election as RFEF president, and of course he's going to have a lot of high profile backers in the game, and I would say he'll probably be getting the vote of a certain Mr. J. Tebas as well. But it's interesting. I think it's another.
Do you want to see my manifesto, Javier? No, not really.
So your name's not Luis Rubiales. Okay, I'll vote for you. I think that's it. You're the candidate for me. But yeah. I think this is another interesting side effect of what's happening at the moment. And there are so many side effects that we're going to become more and more aware of as time goes by. The fact that elections, be it for boards or for clubs, are perhaps going to change. I mean, they're talking in Portugal at the moment. The FC Porto presidential election is set for 20th, 21st of April, and that's surely not going to happen now. And that could have huge effects on Portuguese football, because Porto, for those who are unaware, have not been in great financial shape. They won the league the year before last, and the top of the table as stands at the moment as well. But it's not been going swimmingly for them on the balance sheet for a number of years now. And it's one of the reasons why Marco Silva turned down the Porto job and decided to go to Watford instead, because that they offered him this job and said, okay, well, we need you to cut 120 million euros worth of players and win us the league back. And he said, I think I've left the oven on. I'll be back in a minute.
He said, have you seen me coach recently? That's not going to be possible, I'm afraid.
So that's what led to Sergio Conceição getting the job in the first place. But Pinto da Costa, bear in mind, Jorge Nuno Pinto da Costa has been the president of FC Porto for 38 years. 38 years.
Wow.
That's incredible. So basically, he had challenges for the first time in a long time, and that has been put to the side because the election isn't going to happen now. And that's another way in which it will have an impact on the future of that club, but also other clubs and other associations and federations.
Yeah, I mean, Rubiales has, I mean, going back to Spain, Rubiales has already point scored by calling Javier Tebas negligent for La Liga not being insured against any losses that would happen as a result of the season not being finished. I don't know the veracity of that statement, but I mean, he's not passing up an opportunity to stick the boot in. But there's a couple of things that come out of this for me. One is that a lot of these men who are full of their own self-importance and love just gallivanting around their countries and Europe, just talking about how great they are and how good their leagues are and all the rest of it, are going to have absolutely nothing to do over the coming months. So there's going to be some mad stuff coming out.
Javier Tebas will find a point to, like, you know, stick the boot into Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain, even though they're not doing anything at the moment, I'm sure.
Almost certainly. But one thing you touched on there, and we're not going to have time to talk about every single country in Europe today, as we never do, but something that actually initially, as I understand it, came from the head of the FA in Italy, I believe, but is it appears to be at least obliquely backed up by Rubiales, who says, we don't know when the competition will restart. We're in the hands of what the health authorities say, and we can't guess the future. He says there is no date, but the plan is to extend the season as long as necessary. Now, an idea that came out of Italy originally, as I say, I believe, is to almost stretch this season across two seasons. So you have obviously a far smaller amount of football for what would effectively be 2021, but it goes towards finishing 1920. So you almost go back to a situation where it was a generation or two ago, where there's not quite as much football, but it's stretched out across a longer time. And then when it comes back round to the summer, we have the Euros, as we would have done this year, but we have them next summer. And then the season starts again in earnest the following autumn. What do you think about that idea? And do you think that's going to sort of garner any support among the powers that be?
I think it's an interesting idea, and it's worth considering just from the point of view of what you were saying, Luke, of less football. Because I think what's been abundantly clear from the very early stages of this crisis, is that we just have too much football. There's no wriggle room in the calendar for even a couple of...
Exactly. I think exactly the same. I felt that straight away, yeah.
And you know what I mean? I think as well that the fact that we're all having to come to terms with quite big lifestyle changes as maybe said to us, well, do we need football every night of the week? Really?
Yeah.
Do we need football every night of the week? I mean, we all love it, but it's nice as something.
Andy, I think you're absolutely right.
It's like, nice as something to look forward to as well, isn't it? Whereas,
absolutely. Sorry to cut in. I was just going to say that. A lot of the, and this is anecdotal, but on the radio show I do every week, there is, I mean, even before coronavirus set in and came along, I definitely noticed among my colleagues and among listeners who would get in touch that there was a developing fatigue at the sheer amount of football that was happening just constantly. It was never ending. You'd never have any break either during the week or at the end of a season or whatever. There's nothing. So I wonder whether this tragic event will give people pause for thought about how they do things going forward. And that idea that this, the Italian head of the FA sort of mooted might well be a solution to that, mightn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder that as well, Luke. And I also think that the fact is, if we're being brutally realistic, there are a lot of clubs that might not survive. So maybe it's easier to thin football out from that point. Maybe we have no option, maybe, but to thin football out from this point onwards, who knows? But I do think it's something that's worth considering. And I think as we come back to something approaching normality, whether that be in 6 months or 9 months or whenever, there's going to be a need to ration it. Because, of course, it's been said time and time again, at some point we're going to have to find a point for... It's not just a case of, okay, we're ready to play in mid-May, we're ready to play in June, let's go and play three games a week until like we've got all our fixture obligations done. You know,
yeah.
There's going to have to be some sort of mini pre-season and all the rest of it, isn't there? So it's all going to take a bit of time. As I said on Jules and Andy on Tuesday, I quite firmly believe that finishing this season is the priority ahead of starting next season, because if something has to be written off, it has to be something that's not started rather than something that's 75% done. And I quite strongly believe that. But yeah, I mean, there's going to have to be flexibility. There's no doubt about that.
Heading across to France then, Andy. I mean, you mentioned earlier, I mean, you pre-promoted earlier, you teaser-trailed earlier, something that I think we can all get behind in these difficult times, which is what you've termed, and these are your words on our shared running order, not mine, an unseemly spat between Lyon and Marseille, who have really sort of rolled their sleeves up and got stuck into each other about how the league should finish. Tell us a bit about that and what you think the upshot of that will be.
Well, the two presidents, Lyon Jean-Michel Aulas and Jacques Henriero of Marseille.
Who do you prefer, by the way? Who's your favourite?
Of the presidents?
Are you in the blue corner or the red corner?
Well, you know, I think... you have to say Aulas is the Mac Daddy of football.
Should I say the blue corner and the white corner?
Yeah. The white corner or the white corner? I mean, they're both where the same.
Yeah.
Well, you have to say that Aulas is, as I said, the Mac Daddy of all football club presidents, not just in France, because of his brass balls, which will become totally apparent about 45 seconds down the line if you're not already familiar.
Andy, what about the Montpellier president? He was the king at one point.
He really was. Sadly, no longer with us, Lulu Nicolin. His son, Nicolin, Laurent, now runs the club and does a terrific job. But Héro is actually very new age and apparently quite handy in a martial arts type situation. So I don't think we should make it show policy to upset him. When we look at this spat, I mean, Aulas has been labelled as a sort of French Karen Brady for coming out and having the suggestion that maybe the season should be wiped. And he didn't say, I think the season should be wiped. He said it was one of the possibilities if we can't finish the season, to wipe the season. And all the caveats are lost at this time in all of these conversations. And I realize that. But Marseille and Erol, the president, in a newspaper interview that he gave in response to this, reacted quite badly to this. Dimitri Payet got stuck in on Twitter and got involved. And I'm sure we'll come to Payet a little more when we talk about France and the Euros, and we talk about the knock-on effect of the Euros for all these teams in a little bit. But basically, if we boil it down, Olas thinks, or seems to think, that if we finish it now, we'll get to hold on to our Champions League place, which is going to be quite hard for us to hold on to. And Erol is thinking, as when we referred to Marseille's financial difficulties earlier, we can't afford to not get in the Champions League. So they're both equally self-interested in this situation. And of course, it's their job as presidents to have an eye on the financial implications of this. And because we have to know what, you know, we all want some sort of football to come back to. So they have to deal with all this stuff that seems distasteful now. And I think that's something that we have to accept. But Noel Le Graët, who's the head of the FFF, the French FA, had to separate them last week. Since then, Jean-Michel Aulas has suggested, well, I suppose another idea about deciding who qualifies for the Champions League, we could look at historic performance over the last 3 years or the last 5 years. You're like, oh, come on, man. Are you kidding?
The old Argentinian solution for River Plate.
Yeah, exactly. And he's also threatened to sue Jacques-Henri Hérault as well. So even though they've been told by Le Graët, look, this is really inappropriate, can you just pack it in? They've kind of continued anyway.
Yeah, and what's going to happen, I can see it now, is if we are without football for 3 or 4 months, this show is going to become almost like a Heat magazine gossip column about European presidents and chairmen of football clubs.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
I'm
here for it.
I'm thinking maybe one of our very talented backroom team could get working on some sort of a redo of, do you remember that MTV show, Celebrity Deathmatch? I think it would be really nice to see Olas and Erol get in the ring, or, you know, nominated other sort of person, a ringer. I think Olas would need a ringer, because whereas he's the most sharp-tongued of presidents, like I said, Erol is a bit handy.
I love the idea of saying to producer Charlie, all right, Charlie, you've been doing a great job, but what are you like at stop motion clay animation? Because we really want to do Celebrity Deathmatch. But the thing is, the reason I'm here for it in terms of turning this into a Heat magazine style gossip show is because you make me watch a lot of football that, frankly, I'm not interested in. And we're going to talk about Turkey and the 0-0 draw that came up between Galatasaray and Besiktas later. But before we do that, let's mention something you just alluded to, which is an interesting discussion in L'Équipe in France about how the extra year time between now and when the Euro starts might affect the French squad. Now, I've got sympathy for L'Équipe here, because obviously, like the rest of us, they're scratching around trying to fill their content promises. And they've talked about, I believe, about whether Giroud might be a bit too old, bit of a shame for him, because it might come a year too late for him. But on the other hand, players, exciting young players like Upamecano, who's looked amazing recently for RB Leipzig, and one or two others, might find that they're even more ready than they are now. It's an interesting situation, isn't it? It's an interesting angle.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think you could apply it to a lot of countries. But the way they were looking at France, I think you pointed out Giroud. Payet is another one. You know, by the time Euro 2021 comes about, he'd be 34. I mean, I don't know about you, but I never feel that I'm getting old by dint of my own age. But when you figure out that Dimitri Payet's 34, you're like, Jesus, I must be really getting on a bit now.
Still probably the highest assist maker at West Ham over the last 10 years or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's someone who's had an unbelievable season so far. And we've talked about it quite a lot on OTC this season, the fact that financially they needed to bin him at the start of the season. They couldn't find a taker. They're quite obviously trying to bin him as well, but he's just knuckled down and produced one of his best ever seasons. He's been absolutely amazing for them. And, you know, but players, when they fall off in their 30s, they fall off pretty quickly. And, you know, will things have changed in terms of the competition? As you say, by this time next year, if you talk about the competition directly for Payet, I think Usem Awa at Lyon has been brilliant this season. And
he's a great player.
Well, he'll probably be at an even... You look at his age, you look at his quality, he'll be at an even better place, I think.
It's not just that, Andy. It's the games he's played as well. 21, he's already... What's he done? He's played about... he must have done almost three complete seasons for Lyon already.
Yeah, and he's played in huge European matches in the Champions League and Europa League. He was fantastic against Juventus in the first leg of the Champions League last 16 game. Yeah. And also, the other thing, and this is a sort of two-pronged dilemma, I suppose, for Marseille, is Florian Thauvin, who's missed all but, half an hour of this season, has come back into training and come back into training just as things were starting to shut down. So not only is he someone who would be a direct competitor for the Marseille squad, the French squad, for Dimitri Payet, despite them being teammates. And Thauvin, there's no way he would have made the Euros. There's absolutely no way he would have made the Euros, even if he'd had a fantastic last month of the season, which I still think is a bit of a stretch, given what a long layoff he's coming back from. But they've got something to watch, because he's only got a year left of his contract. His contract expires in 2021. So, you know, you heard it here first. He could be the ultimate free transfer signing when it comes to 2021, and football is hopefully back in full swing. But I think this extrapolates to other countries as well. I mean, I think Leroy Sané is a big one that people were looking at. I think it would have been immensely difficult for Jogi Löw to justify picking him for the Euros this summer, if it was going to happen this summer. With Euro 2021, he could be one of the absolute stars of it. He could be Bayern Munich's best player by then. Who knows? So, you know, there are so many different things that could change in that meantime. So it's gonna help some players and take away from others. I guess the question I've got for you, Luke, is do you think by Euro 2021, Germany will have come around to their senses and made Marc-Andre Ter Stegen the number one, even if it means moving Manuel Neuer into midfield?
I was about to say, you say that about Leroy Sané and Jogi Löw, but Leroy Sané will probably be knocking Löw's door down saying, I saw what you did with Neuer in the World Cup. So there's a precedent there. I want a bit of that action. Yeah, we'll wait and see what happens, I suppose. The really important thing, as we must keep stressing, is that people stay safe and that people look after each other, and football is essentially irrelevant in a situation like this, and we know that. But we are making a football show, so I do think it's fair for us to say that it's a shame for players, that some of the players there you've mentioned who are coming towards the end of their careers, who are having some players are having a really good Indian summer to their careers. A few that you haven't mentioned, a couple based in England, players like Jamie Vardy or whatever, and through no fault of their own, this is probably going to be a difficult thing to resolve, and so we have to feel for them. I particularly feel for Olivier Giroud, who was probably in the first act of what was going to be a bit of an Indian summer, a bit of a renaissance at Chelsea, and you'd hope, because he was so important to them in the World Cup for France as well, that looks far less likely to happen now. So it's going to be probably a real regret of his, but yeah, you know, we must press on, we must live our lives.
Yeah, you're right, and it would have been so perfect for him, because he was getting himself back into nick at a tremendous level for Chelsea, and at the same time he didn't have too much in the tank, because he'd not played at all in the first half of the season. So it's almost the perfect balance for him. What I say is, when do we get to the point where Deschamps decides he's too old, let's bring Gignac back from his Mexican holiday?
Now you're talking. Okay, because everyone listening has been very, very good and very well behaved and really earned their right for us to talk about some actual football, we're going to cross over to Turkey. And the good news is there was a few games that happened. In fact, did all the games happen, Andy? I think they did.
They did.
We want to focus on a couple of them, though. And first of all, I want to focus on Trabzonspor 1, Başakşehir 1, chiefly because, Andy, Turkey was doing what I personally like it doing, which is just bringing out the hits. And I'm talking about Demba Ba opening the scoring, and I'm talking about it being wrapped up as a draw with a Martin Skirt alone goal. I'm talking about Gael Clichy marauding down the left flank at the age of 34. I'm talking about Alexander Sorloth up front and not scoring for Trabzonspor. It's got everything you need. Tell us about it.
It has. But it's a rare thing not to see Sorloth score this season, because he's been in absolutely unbelievable form. I mean, there are many amongst us who love former Premier League players who are hoping for the dream partnership between him and Daniel Sturridge. And obviously that didn't really pan out because it would have been Sorloth with star billing. He's been absolutely unbelievable.
So, got 19 goals in the league this season, I believe.
It's incredible. It really is. And they're hoping to hang on to him in a sort of long-term situation. I won't upset the listeners by talking not just about Martin Skrtel's own goal, but the fact that he now has hair, which I don't think that anyone who's unaware of that, I mean, you can't unhear that, can you really?
No, I think you're doing a real public service there, because I think if people didn't realise that and they were given that as an image, it would be a real shock to the system.
Yeah, maybe, I suppose, if it was to like pop up on an internet search, and there will be lots of bored internet searches over the coming like weeks and months, won't there?
So. Not about football, there won't.
maybe not.
Yeah.
But Demba Ba has been unbelievable. I mean, if you look at a guy who's like, you know, 34, he's had some really serious injuries in his career. Current form, and it was a terrific finish for the goal. He had another couple of opportunities as well, a couple of good saves by the goalkeeper. His last 10 games for Başakşehir, 9 goals, 4 assists. I mean, there's really no arguing with that. There's a reason why Robinho, and you didn't mention him, is on the bench.
I was going to say, I don't know what Okan Buruk is playing at when they're chasing the game and not bringing on a 36-year-old Robinho. But I will be having, if I see him, I'll be having words about that, because that is an absolute dereliction of duty, in my opinion.
Well, I think it was difficult to know how to approach the game, because this is a huge game at the top of the table. These are the top two in the Turkish Super League as it stands at the moment. The Turkish Super League, which as we record, is still running. Get your head around that. Even Russia, the Russian Premier League, which played last weekend, and we saw Zenit beat Ural 7-1. That was suspended on Wednesday until April 10th at the earliest. All Russian professional football was stopped, and yet Turkey's still going. And I think because, you know, Trabzon is one of the most hostile places to play in the Turkish Super League. And it was very difficult, I think, for the players and maybe even the Başakşehir players to get their head around that. And the first half was very tentative, but the second half was really hell for leather. Very, very impressive indeed. And Başakşehir will be a little bit disappointed that they didn't hold on. But you could tell that both teams were finding it difficult whether to stick or twist. I mean, when you look at the other big game in the Turkish Super League, which was between Galatasaray and Beşiktaş, the Istanbul derby. I mean, me and Sam of Set Meals fame went out to that at the match. That would have been 10 months ago. And Sam was saying to me, it's the noisiest football match he's ever been to by a long, long way. And then...
Well, he's an Arsenal fan.
A fair point. But then you fast forward 10 months and, you know, it's one of the matches in Turkish football. And you can hear the players shouting at each other. I mean... I don't think it's wrong to bring up again.
It's particularly strange given the juxtaposition, isn't it, of what you're used to.
I don't think it's wrong to bring up again just how weird it is. And Fatih Terim spoke about it afterwards. He said, you know, we're facing a global problem. You've got state of emergencies, schools shut down. All the other major leagues in the world have been suspended. And, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, he brought up the fact that, you know, in terms of the accredited people, so the press people, stewards, team support, as well as all the players, he said there's 850 accredited people here. You know, you can't say it's not dangerous. And, you know, some of the other players went a little bit further. Fernando Muslera says, look, we just don't want to play. Galatasaray's long-serving goalkeeper said, we just don't want to play. John Obi Mikel, of course, of Trabzonspor, ended up cancelling his contract earlier this week by mutual consent because he'd said on Twitter before the game, I'm scared and I don't want to play. And Falcao had pitched in on his Twitter feed, and his Instagram feed, agreed with him. So we're seeing a lot of things change rapidly, as we've seen in other football environments and in other parts of the world, just in general society in the last little while. I mean, Galatasaray closed their superstore, which is just down from Taksim Square, where they it's always busy day and night, flogging Galatasaray stuff, and that's been shut indefinitely. All the players were on their way to training at Florya, their training ground, yesterday, and they got a message from the club to say, look, we might have an issue, so can everyone just stay at home today? So it really kind of beggars belief the way it's still going on. But as stands, the games at the weekend are set to happen behind closed doors again.
Yeah, it's a crazy situation. I think as we keep saying, it's moving so fast that you wonder whether that will change even between now and the weekend, because we didn't see the Premier League fixtures last week, which feels about 3 months ago now. But last week, the Premier League fixtures were postponed very late, weren't they? So it could the same thing could happen in Turkey if they decide to change it.
Yeah, and the Bundesliga fixtures were put back even later. I mean, they were right until mid-afternoon they were going to be playing behind closed doors, but sense prevailed okay. Eventually.
Absolutely. All right, Andy, that's about as much as we've got time for, I think, for OTC today. Thank you very much for your insight, as ever. It's always really great to chat to you. And we'll be back tomorrow on Football Ramble Daily with the preview show, Marcus, Jim and I. Business is going to carry on in terms of us producing shows and making them and releasing for you guys as normal. We're just doing it remotely because that's the most important and right thing to do in the current situation. I did mention at the start of the show, and just to reiterate, patreon.com/footballrambledaily is really important for us at the moment. So if you could support us over there, we'd appreciate it. All that's left for me to say is stay safe, make sure you wash your hands, and Andy, I will see you again soon.
Will do. Look forward to it, mate. Take care of yourselves.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.